Hello, I'm Christine, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 19th of February, 2025. Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD. Simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition. Reading for you this week, we have myself, Christine, Angela, Ian, Mohammed, Helen, Mina, Simon, and of course, not forgetting Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have all the latest from Beacon with Mohammed and Helen. And from innovation to nostalgia, we have the latest news from the Black Country too. We continue our train spotting journey with Talking News contributor and railway enthusiast David Smith. You'll have to be sharp of mind as we have another quick fire quiz from Soundings contributor Roger Brooks. Are things set to become a little milder and sunnier? We hear from Mina, who has the weather forecast for the week ahead. And February is a pivotal month in the garden, with lots of preparation needed for the year ahead. From sowing plants and vegetable seeds, through to pruning and getting nesting sites ready for our feathered friends. With thanks to our gardening experts at MK Pulse magazine, we have all the horticultural hints and tips on what to do in the garden during February. There's all the reaction to the weekend's football action for Wolves and West Brom. And talking of Wolves, past few months has provided Beacon with the fortunate opportunity to collaborate with the Wolves Foundation. With a series of multi-sport sessions and activities held across both the Beacon Centre and the Wolves Foundation in Audersley, with thanks to Beacon Community Lifestyle and Gym Coordinator Daniel Clark, we bring a new podcast series, Sporting Stories, which focuses on some of our members at Beacon and the indelible impact such activity projects are having. Local news to start though with me, Christine and Ian, but first, Angela.
Now, have you received your winter fuel payment? Well, pensioners eligible for the DWP winter fuel payment who have not yet received it can now contact the benefits department if they have not received their confirmation letter. This lump sum payment of £200 or £300 is provided to households receiving pension credit to help cover higher energy costs during the colder months. According to government guidance, most payments were made automatically in November or December. Eligible pensioners should have received a letter detailing the amount they will receive and the bank account the payment will be made into, typically the same one used for pension credits or other benefits. Most pensioners who did not receive a letter or the payment in your account by January 29, 2025 are advised to contact the Winter Fuel Payment Centre. Do I need to contact the Winter Fuel Payment Centre? This is the first year the DWP has means tested the winter fuel payment. Instead of all pensioners over 66 receiving it, only those claiming certain benefits are eligible. While pension credit is the main qualifying benefit, eligibility also includes those claiming or receiving the following: universal credit, income-related employment and support allowance, income-based job seekers allowance, income support, child tax credit, working tax credit. If you have applied for one of these benefits but have not yet received a decision, there is no need to contact the Winter Fuel Payment Centre. Despite the winter fuel payment being made means tested, pensioners remain among the best supported benefit claimants in the country. with the state pension set to rise by 4.1% this April, thanks to the triple lock system, which ensures pensions increase by the highest of inflation, wage growth, or 2.5%. In contrast, other benefits such as disability support and child-related payments will see a smaller 1.7% increase, as their uprating is tied to the Consumer Prices Index rate of inflation from the previous September. In 2024, this figure was at its lowest in 3 years, meaning many working-age claimants will receive a much more modest uplift. If you are eligible for the winter fuel payments, you can also contact the Winter Fuel Payments Centre if you need to report a change in circumstances, need to update your address or personal details, wish to cancel future payments, or want to return a payment. Report any changes in circumstances as soon as possible, such as stopping a benefit, moving house, or moving into a care home, as these may affect your winter fuel payment amount. How do I contact the Winter Fuel Payments Centre? You can reach the Winter Fuel Payments Centre helpline at 0800 731 0160 or send a letter by post. For more information, head to the government's website. When contacting the Payments Centre, be ready to provide your name, address, date of birth and national insurance number.
Members of a Sedgley-based organisation will raise the subject of the closure of a popular clinic at a community forum next week. Sedgley and District Community Association will discuss the future of the Ladies Walk Clinic along with the library. The buildings are scheduled to close in March 2026 when the lease on the buildings comes to an end. The library in Ladies Walk opened in 2001 as part of a £4 million private finance initiative deal, which also saw the new state-of-the-art health centre open on the site. The future of the health centre is set to be discussed at a meeting of the Dudley North Your Home Your Forum this week. Robert Ferris, Honorary Secretary of the Sedgley and District Community Association, said, "As an association, we have been informed that the reason for the clinic and library closing is that the owners are unwilling to renew the leases and would prefer to redevelop the site. But as yet, I can find no record of a planning application being submitted for a change of use of the Ladies Walk Centre on the Dudley Planning Portal. The anticipated loss of these facilities from such an accessible location in the heart of a 12,000-strong community is very troubling, especially on top of other recent losses like the closure of Sedgley Market and the Bilstrand Street car park. We accept that this particular long-term contract between a private company and the government, where the private sector designed, built, financed and maintained a public asset, has benefited Sedgley greatly, but its loss after 25 years is hard to accept. I would urge anyone who is concerned about this issue to attend the meeting where representatives of Dudley Council will be present and we can appeal to them to intervene in this matter. The meeting takes place on Wednesday, February the 19th at Sedgley Community Centre, Ladies Walk at 6:30 p.m.
From the Ladies Walk Clinic to an important update about Dudley's Russell's Hall, as the hospital is moving to a ticketless car parking system to ease queues. Number plate cameras will be installed at Dudley's Russell's Hall hospital car parks to modernise the parking system and ease traffic congestion at the site. The scheme will mean motorists using the three visitor car parks will no longer need tickets, as the current parking arrangements will be replaced by an automatic number plate recognition ANPR. Drivers will be able to pay at a terminal or via an app. It will also allow blue badge holders to register online for free parking or scan their badge on site. Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust Chief Executive Diane Wake said, "We are delighted to announce that our three Russell's Hall visitor car parks are soon to be using automated number plate recognition software. This means our patients and visitors will no longer need a physical ticket, which will allow better movement of traffic in and out of our car parks, and will make visits to the hospital much smoother." The Trust has held an online public consultation exercise over the initiative, which will see penalty notices issued if motorists fail to pay up in time. It has also urged residents, community groups and staff to air their views on what were suitable times to drop off, find a space, or exit without paying, with options varying from 5 to 20 minutes. And for those forgetting to pay, in inverted commas, before leaving the car park, where the 24, 48 or 72 hours would be the preferred time period for payment to be made afterwards to avoid being fined. The survey on the Rate My NHS website stated, "We are seeking the views of our staff and patients to develop the final design and protocols to allow the installation of the automatic number plate recognition system to patient car parks at Russell's Hall." However, the scheme and the way the survey has been carried out have attracted some criticism. Posting on Dudley Health Watch's Facebook page, resident Angela Philpott said, "It seems to me that if they change it, it will cause chaos. Once again, not taking any regard for people who are not online."
Up next, we hear from Helen, who of course has for us the Beacon update.
Every 3 years, a pharmaceutical needs assessment is undertaken which reviews the current provision of local pharmacy services in Dudley and anticipates future needs. This helps to ensure that needs are met and that any gaps in services can be identified. The views of local people are important in shaping the borough's pharmacy services, and this is your chance to have your say in a 15-minute survey. You can complete the survey online at www.bit.ly/DudleyPNA. That's www.bit.ly/DudleyPNA. If you'd like help to access the survey in another format, please call us on 01902 880 111.
Thanks for that update, Helen. Next up, we have another block of local news. And up first, we hear from Christine.
Tennis, anyone? Well, it will quite literally be a case of new balls, please, at a Wolverhampton tennis club, as new paddle courts are set to be built. Wolverhampton Lawn Tennis and Squash Club will install 3 new paddle tennis courts at its site in Newbridge Crescent, Wolverhampton. 2 existing grass tennis courts will be replaced with 3 new roofed courts as part of plans approved by planners at City of Wolverhampton Council. The burgeoning sport, which is a mix of squash and tennis, was invented in Mexico in the late 1960s. It is played in doubles on an enclosed court about a third the size of a tennis court and uses the same scoring system. A report by the City of Wolverhampton Council's planning officers, who approved the work, said, "The principle of erecting 3 paddle tennis courts at this location is acceptable and no objections have been received from Sport England or the Lawn Tennis Association." While the paddle tennis courts and associated infrastructure would be visible from nearby residential properties, its visual impact on occupiers would not be unacceptably harmful given the separation distance and design, which would be in keeping with the appearance of other infrastructure at the tennis club. As of the end of 2023, there were over 500 paddle courts in the UK. The number of courts has grown rapidly in recent years, from 50 in 2019 to 350 in the summer of 2023. There are around 90,000 active players in the UK, according to estimates. A statement included with the application said, "The proposed paddle tennis courts will result in a slight intensification of use of this existing complex, with additional vehicles generated, but these will barely be discernible in the overall context and use of the site. Similarly, the additional parking spaces will not be readily noticeable. The courts will be covered by a canopy to maximise their use and ensure games can be played in all weather conditions, but the visual impact of this will also be minimal."
And it's Six Love for a free volunteer-led exercise programme that has reached its 6th birthday. Park Active, a programme of weekly exercise sessions coordinated by Dudley Council, first launched in February 2019. Since then, there have been more than 6,000 total attendances and 50 volunteers have been trained. The authority recruits volunteers who have usually never worked in the fitness industry before and trains them to deliver simple outdoor fitness sessions using bodyweight exercises. Two such volunteers, Donna Dawson and Prit Patel, have clocked up 100 hours of volunteering since 2022, delivering the sessions at Abbey Street Park in Lower Gornal. They met with the council's cabinet member for public health, Councillor James Clinton, on Saturday, along with two other volunteers who have also clocked up 100 hours of service, Malcolm Charles and Samantha Brown. The quartet received passes for Dudley Zoo, Black Country Living Museum and Dudley Canal and Tunnel Trust. They were also given certificates and a personal thank you letter from the council's interim chief executive, Balvinder Heran. Councillor James Clinton, Cabinet Member for Public Health and Wellbeing, said, "Park Active is a brilliant example of how councils and communities can work together to create something great. It couldn't work without our brilliant volunteers, and I was really pleased to meet with them to say thank you for the fantastic work they are doing. I would also like to thank the Friends of the Parks groups, where Park Active takes place, for their ongoing support. The sessions run weekly at five borough parks, Stevens Park in Quarry Bank, Buffery Park and Grange Park in Dudley, Abbey Street Park in Gornal and Stevens Park in Wollascote. They are aimed at people of all ages and fitness levels, but especially popular with people who are not typically sporty. It is believed to be the only volunteer-led program of its kind in the country. The council coordinates and is responsible for the governance of the scheme, but it is the volunteers who drive the program forward and make the weekly sessions happen. The council also works with Friends of Parks groups to help promote and sustain the classes. For more details on the weekly Park Active sessions, or for information on how to become a volunteer yourself, visit healthydudley.co.uk/park-active.
Our parks are great spaces to have a pleasant, relaxing and fun time walking a dog, but the reality is sometimes a little more stressful, especially if their inquisitive and curious nature leads them to explore. It can quite literally be anything but a walk in the park. And with many other open spaces to enjoy across the UK, dog owners are being warned to keep their pets away from a highly poisonous plant that has been washing up on our beaches. Hemlock roots are toxic to both humans and animals, with reports of dogs becoming very unwell or even dying after coming into contact with it on our beaches. Sightings of the plant, also known as poisonous parsnip, has led Carmarthenshire County Council and Cornwall Council to advise dog walkers to stay away from their beaches. Dog owners have been advised to stay vigilant and seek urgent assistance from a vet if their pup has ingested or touched the plant. So, what is hemlock and what does hemlock root look like? Here's everything you need to know, including the common symptoms of hemlock poisoning in dogs. Hemlock roots are the roots of the hemlock plant, which is known for being extremely poisonous to both humans and animals. They are often found growing in damp places such as riverbeds or ditches. However, during the winter, they can be washed down onto beaches, which could prove fatal for our pets. Poison hemlock is highly toxic and can be fatal to humans and animals. It has a thick, white taproot that looks like a parsnip and is sometimes confused with wild parsnips or carrots. The central stem has purple and reddish blotches with a delicate umbrella-like white flower on the top that can look very similar to cow parsley. Hemlock has a distinctly unpleasant musty smell if the plant has been damaged. What are the symptoms of hemlock poisoning in dogs? Guide Dogs UK explain that symptoms of hemlock poisoning in dogs may include drooling, weakness and tremors, while severe poisoning can affect the nervous system, causing respiratory distress and even death. If you suspect your dog has come into contact with hemlock or is suffering from hemlock poisoning, seek veterinary care immediately. For further information, you can contact the RSPCA or visit their website at rspca.org.uk to obtain a document that highlights the wild plants that are poisonous to dogs and what they look like. Now it's time to test your knowledge, as we have the quiz questions for this edition. Take it away, Roger.
TNF soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, Roger Brooks here with another of our quick quizzes. So, mind's in gear and off we go. Some of the questions I hope are very easy and some I hope are quite difficult. So, best of luck. Here we go. What's the name of the famous venue in Liverpool where the Beatles started their career big time? Question 2. This is on sportswear. Years ago, there was a brand called Blue Ribbon Sports. A few years ago, they changed their name to something snappier, and it's now one of the world's leading sports clothing and footwear brands. Question 3. There's one of Britain's best-known performers was actually originally named Harry Webb. Harry Webb. Who do we all know Harry Webb as these days? Question 4. In which year did World War I end? Question 5 on opera. Who wrote the opera Aida? Spectacular thing set in ancient Egypt. Question 6. In the highly successful and long-running series on television, The Crown, many actors and actresses changed their roles, or the actor playing various roles changed over the years. Which actress played our late Queen, Elizabeth, in the first series? Question 7. The huge city of Istanbul in Turkey used to go by another name. What was that name? Question 8. Which country in the world has the most islands, islands, in its territory? Question 9. Which is the smallest sovereign state in the world? And question 10, again on geography, what's the name of the capital of Canada? Best of luck with those. Results later.
TNS soundings.
Cheers for those questions, Roger. I'll get my mind working on them. Up now, however, is another block of local news. It's official. Christmas is finally over in Dudley after the town's Christmas tree was removed in time for Valentine's Day. At the start of the week, the tree was still standing proud in the town's marketplace. Now all that remains is a stump after council workers finally felled it 82 days after its lights were due to have been officially switched on. The switch-on ceremony on November the 23rd was itself postponed due to adverse weather conditions. It's understood that the delay was down to problems removing and disconnecting the tree's lights, with workers tied up on emergency repairs to street lights and other more pressing work. The lights were removed last week, and the tree has now finally been removed from pride of place. Well, Roy Wood did wish it could be Christmas every day.
And on the theme of music, a King's Wimford farm shop has applied for a license to hold a music festival. Robert's Farm Shop in Ashwood Fieldhouse Farm off the A449 in King's Wimford held a small event last June, which owners Matthew and Lucy Roberts said was well received. Off the back of its success, they hope to hold a slightly larger event this year to accommodate up to 1,500 people. The new license, if approved, will allow for the sale of alcohol, performance of dance, and the playing of live music. From Monday to Friday, 12 p.m. to 10:30 p.m, Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m, and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Recorded music will be played Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 10:30 p.m, Saturday, 10 a.m. to 11 p.m, and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. The application is currently under consideration by South Staffordshire Council. Mr. Roberts said, "We had a small music festival last June, supporting local bands and suppliers, and it went really well. The feedback was really positive. We would like to slightly increase the size of it, just to maybe 1,500 people, hence the application submitted to the council. We are really trying to support local musicians and suppliers, as things are tough for them at the moment. Hopefully South Staff's council will support us. Members of the public can inspect the application by contacting South Staffordshire Council's licensing team by emailing licensing@sstaffs.gov.uk or calling the council on 01902 696 000. Any objections must be submitted in writing by March 7, 2025. Objections must be relevant to the licensing objectives, which include the prevention of crime and disorder, public safety, prevention of public nuisance, and the protection of children from harm. Copies of all objections will be sent to the applicant, and those making objections will have to appear at the Council's Licensing Subcommittee, a public notice states.
And in a week where Luke Combs and Beyoncé made country music history, many within the realms of contemporary music have said these performances marked a cultural shift where country music has become an important part of mainstream culture. Fresh from playing sold-out gigs at the Robin Bilston, Dudley Town Hall and other UK venues, members of Luke Combs UK flew off to the USA on Thursday for a road trip of gigs. And as part of the tour, they will play at the grand opening of Luke Combs' new entertainment venue in Nashville, Category 10, in April. Combs saw his cover of Tracy Chapman's Fast Car streamed more than 65 million times on Spotify in less than 2 months, and won Song of the Year at the Country Music Awards in 2023. He sells out concerts worldwide and, in common with many of his peers, has opened his own venue in the home of country music, Nashville. Lead singer of Luke Combs UK, Liam Price, said he started the band in July 2023 when he became tired of singing general cover songs and decided to do something different, recruiting talented musicians from Wolverhampton and Telford. He admits the explosion of interest in country music in the UK and Europe was partly behind the idea, as well as his uncanny resemblance to the real Luke Combs. And it's paid off. With Luke Combs UK selling out venues all over the UK and Ireland, they are also regulars at Rodeo's Bar in Wensfield. Liam said the plan was always to go to the USA and showcase the act there, but it has only come after a lot of hard work and the invitation from Luke Combs' management was the icing on the cake. He said, "This is beyond our wildest dreams. To be recognised by Luke Combs himself and invited to play at his venue in Nashville is something we never imagined when we started out. But it is also down to hard work, and in the first year of the band we played over 100 dates getting our name and his music out there. We also had to do a lot of promotion media-wise around the UK-wide tour to help secure a visa for the American gigs. That also involves contacting Luke's management, and we were amazed to be invited to play at his new venue. We are only playing at one of the bars in the complex just off Broadway in Nashville. It's a very big venue, but it's an honour to be asked to appear on the opening night." The band kick off the tour in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania on Friday and are also booked to play the NFL draft event in Green Bay a week after the Nashville gig before returning to North America for a short Canadian tour in August. For more details of Luke Combs UK, visit the website at lukecombsuk.com/.
And from the rhythm of drumsticks to the beat of some clever tactics, as Hales Owen Library in Dudley is starting a new board game club. Taking place from 24th of February on Mondays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m, there are plenty of games available, including chess, Monopoly, Scrabble, Lost Lands and Cluedo. This is a great opportunity for anyone who maybe feels a bit lonely to have fun and make new friends, said Dudley Library's partnership manager, Stephanie Roden. Hales Owen is also holding a Tales After Dark event on Thursday the 20th of March at 6:30 p.m. Two unsettling stories from the shelves of the Weeping Bank Library will be read, a must for those who like to be scared and unsuitable for under 15s. Operating under the Better brand, GLL is the not-for-profit social enterprise that runs Dudley's libraries on behalf of the council. For more information about either event, call Hales Owen Library on 01 384 812 980. Now then, here's an innovation that could revolutionise the railway system as we know it. A train which is powered purely on hydrogen is now undergoing tests, with those behind it hoping it could help move the industry away from fossil fuels. The former Thameslink locomotive has been converted in Warwickshire and now only produces water as an emission. The company behind the project hopes the train could be a cheaper alternative for railway lines which cannot be electrified. Tests are being carried out on routes in Warwickshire, Worcestershire and the West Midlands ahead of potential future commercial uses. Sounds fascinating. As someone who knows all about our railway systems, is of course our extremely knowledgeable and valued contributor to the Talking News, railway enthusiast and big member David Smith. And over the next few weeks, in an extension to our Round the Reekin series, we shall be hearing more from David, learning all about how his enthusiasm for the railway system came about, and despite challenges faced, how he still enjoys it to this day. So, without further ado, it's time once more to go train spotting.
People who are not interested in railways have looked at my loco sheds and asked me, where have I first seen particular locomotives? When, for example, I tell them that I first saw most of the Class 46s at New Street, they ask me how, as when I started train spotting and up until they were withdrawn in the 1980s, the entire class was split between two depots only, Lehrer in Plymouth and Gateshead in Newcastle, both of which are a great distance from Birmingham. I would then explain to them that these locomotives work mainline services, mostly between Newcastle and Plymouth, passing through Birmingham. What some people don't realise is that just because, for example, a particular locomotive is allocated to a depot 50 miles from where they live, it does not mean that if they train spot only at their local station, they won't see that particular locomotive. If it is from a class which regularly works on mainline services to that station, then there is a good chance of seeing it. At other times, I've been asked how come I have seen plenty of locomotives of a particular class allocated to a particular depot and none at all from another class based at the same depot. An example of this was when I was asked how I'd seen a lot of the 46s allocated to Gateshead without seeing any of its class of 55 Deltic allocation. The reason for this was because at the time I'd not been to any station on the East Coast main line from London King's Cross, which runs through Newcastle on its way to Edinburgh and Aberdeen, which was the only route worked by the 22 class 55 Deltics. The Class 08 shunters, of which over 1,000 were built, were the hardest to class. Nearly all depots of British Rail had an allocation. One reason why it was hard to see all members of this class was because of its size, but the main reason was because they were spread around depots all over the country. Because they were built for the purpose of local shunting, each locomotive did not stray too far from its own depot. Anyone hoping to see them all would have to travel to many stations, depots and sidings in order to do so. Out of the 900 or so still in service in 1979, I have seen around 750. The first BR depot I visited was Saltley in Birmingham. This was on Saturday, the 3rd of March 1979, and from that date onward, I used to go there most Saturdays and in the school holidays, three or four times a week. I did this for just over 3 years. The classes of locomotive usually to be found there were 08, 20, 25, 45, 47 and 56. Saltley was where, over the next 3 years, I saw most members of Towton's allocation of class 20, around 70 out of the 80 allocated there. These 20s worked to Birmingham on freight trains from Nottingham, usually in pairs. 228 were built for freight traffic only, but they had worked on passenger services over the years. Apart from Towton, other depots to have an allocation were Inverness, Haymarket in Edinburgh, Eastfield in Glasgow, and Tinsley in Sheffield, which had around 50 locomotives, most of which I had seen by the summer of 1981. From the 228 built, I've seen roughly 200.
Up next, let's have another block of local news.
The origins of Walsall's leather industry start in the Middle Ages. Although there are only a few references to leather workers, there are many to lorriners or saddlers ironmongers. Lorriners made metal items of horse furniture, stirrups, bits, buckles, spurs, and harness mounts. They also manufactured saddle trees. Lorriners needed high-grade iron, coal, charcoal, and limestone to make their goods. Walsall and the area around it could provide all these. The lorrinery trade continued to grow in the 17th and 18th centuries. Many of the town's leather goods trade pioneers were bridle cutters. By settling in Walsall, they could call upon the skills of local lorriners for their bits and buckles. In the early 19th century, leatherworking became an important local trade. After 1840, the development of the town's leatherworking industry gained pace. The arrival of the South Staffordshire Railway to Walsall in 1847 gave a boost to the trade. By 1851, there were 75 firms making bridles, saddles, and harnesses. Fast forwarding to 2025, and campaigners fighting to save Walsall's historic leather museum site are celebrating after council bosses shelved plans to move the facility after a public outcry. At a Walsall Council cabinet meeting last week, leader Councillor Gary Perry said the budget proposal to move the visitor centre's activities from the former leather workshop in Littleton Street West to an undisclosed location was being dropped. It was part of the Tory-led council's projections to slash cut £29 million from the council's budget in the next financial year. The change of heart has been welcomed by campaigners who said efforts were needed to raise the profile of the attraction to increase visitor numbers and income. Artist Rob Conway, who runs painting workshops at the attraction, said, "I signed the petition to keep the museum where it is. I think it's amazing that the council has changed its mind. It's amazing for the staff who are very aware of the community and the people they serve. When I visit, I can see that the focus is on the local people and the heritage of Walsall. All it really needs is ideas to generate more footfall."
Bold plans for a museum to remember a Black Country battle where Vikings were driven out of Britain are also being discussed. It was the Savage Battle that created England as we now know it. Yet it's largely unknown by the city where it took place, Wolverhampton. All school children tend to know Hastings 1066, yet Tettenhall 910, a bloodbath that shaped the boundaries of this nation, has been near erased from history. On August the 5th of that year, an Anglo-Saxon force led by King Edward the Elder and his sister Ethelflaed, Lady of the Mercians, put a huge invading Viking force to the sword. Thousands perished, including two Danish kings, and by the end of the slaughter, Viking plans to rule this country lay in ruins. Now, a £400,000 plan to give the Battle of Tettenhall the prominence it deserves has been unveiled. To that end, discussions have begun to turn the disused Tettenhall pumping station, a listed Victorian building on Regis Road, into a museum, housing not only a permanent battle exhibition, but also areas dedicated to Wolverhampton's transport and industrial heritage and its role in the two world wars. It will also tell the story of Ethelflaed, a true local warrior queen. The public know about Boudica, but are clueless when it comes to a ruler who really gave the Vikings a kicking. There are hopes of a historical battle trail threading through Wolverhampton, reenactments, speakers, school education packs, and funding for 30 art commissions to add to the 910 experiences. The far-reaching project is being championed by Tettenhall District Community Trust, and members have really pushed the longboat out.
Project leader Rebecca Creswell is in the process of submitting a grant application to the Arts Council. Sponsorship opportunities and funding appeals will follow. fellow Trust member John Green has been instrumental in negotiations with pumping station owners Severn Trent, with a meeting taking place on March 6th. Rebecca told the Trust's annual general meeting, "There was no education of this amazing history when I was at school. We didn't learn about that particular history. There is a rich tapestry of history around Tettenhall and the Wolverhampton area, and there should be a real emphasis on the Battle of 910. Some people have heard of it, some have not. It was a hugely significant event in the area that has not been celebrated at all. Æthelflaed is a significant heroic figure whose life should be celebrated more. Celebrating local history is so important. It is enriching families in the community and getting people out walking to the various locations. There is one sticking point, the battle's location. Some historians believe it took place in Smestow Valley, others favour Wensfield as the location. Wensfield History Society hopes the go-ahead can be given for archaeological digs to settle all arguments. But Rebecca stressed the battle is a Wolverhampton-wide moment in time, where is not really an issue, and the museum will be dedicated to Wolverhampton's past. I think there is potential not just for Tettenhall, but Wolverhampton as a whole," she said. "It has evolved into a way to showcase all of Wolverhampton's historical heritage. Transport, World War II, there are a lot of different aspects to this project. I have been working hard with John Green to secure a meeting with Severn Trent, and we have secured a meeting about potentially giving the pumping station as a community asset. From a creative and aesthetic point of view, that building is amazing. Why a museum for Tettenhall? We have a busy museum in Wolverhampton. We have Bantock House. Tettenhall is close to where the battle was supposed to be. That's one of the reasons. On a wider level, it would provide opportunities for local artists. It could be the site to showcase local events, music events, but I want all tied in with projects at the museum. If the pumping station does turn out to be a fantastic asset, then we are looking at a permanent site that would have to be coordinated and stage managed. It would also be a large asset, capable of accommodating 5 separate museums, a cafe and workshops." Rebecca added, "It is one of these positive things we can all have a hand in. A venue like this could really put us on the map. Severn Trent seem very positive."
At the battle, the Anglo-Saxon army led by Æthelflaed effectively ended the dark years of Viking invasion. The long struggle was over. It also showed the importance of Anglo-Saxon kingdoms cooperating and working together to beat a common foe. Before the battle, they fought between themselves. Æthelflaed's finest hour showed the importance of a united front, and those splintered kingdoms eventually melted into one, ruled by her brother, King Edward the Elder. Without 910, who knows how many countries England would have been divided into. And make no mistake, the Vikings took a tater in at Tettenhall. At the time, the Vikings had established a stronghold in the north known as Danelaw, and looked to set to secure the south. But they bit off more than they could chew when stepping into Staffordshire to rape and pillage. Led by Danes Elwis and Halfdan, who both died in the battle, they were cut down by an Edward and Æthelflaed's force drawn from all the Anglo-Saxon kingdoms. Using her knowledge of the River Severn, Æthelflaed managed to position her men and women between the two Danish armies. They sprung a surprise attack that simply overwhelmed the enemy. Many thousands perished, many noblemen were butchered. Æthelflaed and Edward the Elder didn't stop there. They built fortified towns, including Bridgnorth, captured the Viking stronghold of Lindsey, and sent the invaders packing. In 917, she really put the skids under the Vikings by masterminding the defeat of 3 Danish armies and capturing the Danelaw borough of Derby. Not a woman to be messed with was Æthelflaed, daughter of Alfred the Great. Anglo-Norman chronicler William of Malmesbury described her as a powerful accession of Edward's party, the delight of his subjects, the dread of his enemies, a woman of enlarged soul. She died in Tamworth on June 12, 918. the body carried to Gloucester and buried at St. Oswald's Priory. Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us, brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, it's Mina here. After a rather settled spell of, well, rather cold weather, it does look as though it's all going to change as we progress through the coming week, as the forecast is for the decent temperatures to continue, but with it, some increasingly wet weather to set in too. The sunrise and sunset times are 7:05 a.m. for the sunrise and 5:40 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 21st of February, it is looking as though the day will start dry with a few sunny spells breaking through, with a moderate southerly breeze bringing with it a warmer front. Temperatures will continue this upward curve and may even reach 13 degrees. However, don't let this catch you out, as there is a strong chance of some drizzle setting in from midday, with light rain continuing right through into the evening too. And this pattern of weather shall continue as we move on to the weekend. A moderate breeze, decent temperatures hovering around 12 degrees, and a persistent chance of rain expected on both Saturday 22nd and Sunday 23rd of February. So it does unfortunately look very much like a wet weather weekend on the cards. On to next week, and the outlook is still rather dreary for Monday 24th and Tuesday 25th of February, with our brollies to be put into good use. However, there will be a noticeable change setting in, with the odd spell of sunshine breaking through. As we move into Wednesday and Thursday, a westerly breeze should help to finally shift the rather stubborn spell of rain that has been hanging over the region, bringing with it some drier, brighter and cooler spells of weather at around 8 degrees. So, there we have it, a cheery sunny into the forecast. Do take care, have a wonderful week and enjoy the weather.
Cheers for that weather update, Mina. Now it's time to find out how our local football teams have been getting on.
Albion hit back in the first half to claim a point from an entertaining 1-1 draw at Millwall in the capital. The Baggies made it 15 draws from 33 championship games, with a first tie under Tony Mowbray in the head coach's sixth fixture, as the boss still awaits a clean sheet in his second spell. An own goal from Millwall's Joe Bryan restored parity 25 minutes in after towering home skipper Jake Cooper nodded a deserved early lead. An end-to-end finale at the Den will arguably be best remembered for the returning cameo role for Daryl Dyke, 1 year on from his Achilles hell at Ipswich. But after a tough evening against Blackburn in midweek, Baggies had goalkeeper Joe Wildsmith to thank for a string of late saves to preserve the point. Starters Jed Wallace on his old stomping ground and Grady Diangana caught the eye with fine displays, but Albion could not do enough for a third win under Mowbray. Albion's poor record against Millwall extended to just one win in 13, but this was a useful point to keep Mowbray's men sixth, for now, in the standings. Talking of poor records, Wolves have not fared too well on the red side of Merseyside either. You have to go right back to 2010 with Mick McCarthy at the helm to find the old goal's last league victory at Anfield. And despite leaving Anfield with no points again, Wolves boss Vitor Pereira can be pleased with the performance his side put in against the league leaders. Wolves were unfortunate that a deflection fell kindly for Luis Diaz, leading to the opening goal, before the Colombian was fouled for a penalty. Pereira's side battled hard in the second half and had the better of it for large periods. Such was the manner of Wolves' second half performance. This was the first time on record since 2003-2004 that Liverpool failed to attempt a shot in the second half of a Premier League game at Anfield. In fact, it was the first time in this period that the Reds went an entire half of football without attempting a shot in a home league match. After forcing Alisson into a great save to keep out new signing Marshall Munetzi and João Gomes firing a shot high into the cop from close range, Wolves deservedly pulled a goal back. A neat flick from substitute Bellegarde found Matheus Cunha on the edge of the penalty box. Wolves' maverick Brazilian, fresh off signing a new deal at Molineux, dummied to go on his right foot before using his left to whip a curling effort in at Alisson's far post to stun the Anfield crowd. There was a nervousness around Anfield as Wolves pushed for an equaliser late on. A neat move involving Cunha and Tommy Doyle saw a cross flash across the six-yard box, but for a last-ditch interception from Jarrell Kwanza, Wolves' Marshall Munetzi looked set for an easy tap-in to make it 2-2. But Liverpool held on to the 2-1 win and reinstate their 7-point lead at the summit. Wolves may feel disappointed to not be leaving Merseyside with a point, but they pushed Slot's side harder than many sides have this campaign. Although they sit just 2 points above Ipswich Town in 18th place, Wolves can take plenty of positives heading into their next league match at Bournemouth.
Hi, this is James Wolves fan. Just reporting back for Liverpool to Wolverhampton Wanderers 1. I thought we played very well, but I thought we started pretty slowly in the first half. But I think the frustrating thing is the fact that we don't get the ball to all quickly enough. But all in all, I thought it was a good game. I thought we played well. And I thought Cunha's goal was an excellent goal that gave us a bit of impetus. But I just feel that we need to become a little more clinical, especially with the games that we've got coming up. We need to be a lot more clinical and to win those games. That's what we need. And yeah, it was basically a very good performance. I'm happy. Anyway, bye.
And talking of Wolves, past few months has provided Beacon with the fortunate opportunity to collaborate with the Wolves Foundation. With a series of multi-sport sessions and activities held across both the Beacon Centre and the Wolves Foundation in Audersley, with thanks to Beacon Community Lifestyle and Gym Coordinator Daniel Clark, we bring a new podcast series, Sporting Stories, which focuses on some of our members at Beacon and the indelible impact such activity projects are having.
I'm just here with Vaughan, who does quite a lot of our community activities. How are you today, Vaughan? You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
I'm okay to carry on with this today. So a little chat. Thank you. So just a bit of an open question to start with. In terms of the community activities, you do the walks, you do the VIPs. How do you find them generally? Do you find them engaging? Do you find them helpful socially? Sorry.
I do. I like the walks, of course. Before I came in here, I was always active.
Yeah.
When you lose your sight, it changes... Your world completely. You just cannot go here, there, and everywhere like you did before.
Yeah.
So the walks, at least, give me a certain amount of opportunity to get out and stretch.
Mm. What sort of sports activities did you do before your sight loss?
I used to live on my bike.
Oh, did you?
On my bike, every day. Before then, I used to play badminton around the clock.
Oh, did you?
3 or 4 nights a week on weekends.
No.
I think I'd probably have a bit of a problem playing badminton now, but there you go.
No, thank you. You also did the tandems, don't you? So the tandems, is that some injury as well?
Yeah, I love the tandems, because before I came here, before I lost my sight, before I came here, I used to spend half my life on my bike. I used to drive, but my bike was really my main means of transport, or my most favourite means of transport. So opportunity here to go on the tandems arose, I jumped at it, and I think that's excellent.
No, that's good.
Yeah, shame that's only once a fortnight. Mm.
And obviously, weather doesn't it? So we only
well,
of course it does, but of course. In terms of Any sports that you used to do before I was here, or is there anything else that you used to do that we could feel we could bring back that I haven't done, or anything we can make more accessible, if that makes sense?
What I used to do here?
Here. Did you do any sort of sports here before, like the bowls or bocce or anything
no,
like that?
No, no. What's the other one you said?
Bocce.
What's that?
Basically, it's like a ball, there's like a jack in the middle, and it's like tactile, and it's like something we're looking at doing. No, no. But is there anything else we could make more accessible in terms of our activities or anything else we could do?
Is it just a question of keeping the price down that prevents the walks from being more regular? I mean, they're fortnightly, aren't they?
Yeah, to be honest, yeah.
I mean, is there any chance that those could be, say, 3 a month instead of 2 a month?
Definitely look into that. Could definitely look into that. And do you find it just helps physically? I mean, obviously, physically walking helps, doesn't it? Do you find it helps mentally as well, socially?
Well, you know, it's certainly good to be with other people and, you know, socialise, which obviously when you're stuck in your little pigeon pen, like I am most of the time, it's good, you know, and obviously the different folks come in, they help us, the volunteers, and it's good to be with them, yeah.
Lovely. Thank you for your time.
Hopefully, our gardening experts at MK Pulse magazine have a relaxing selection of tips for the month ahead, as up next, we have our gardening section full of advice on how to get your garden ready.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Jan with some seasonal tips and ideas from the gardening expert at the MK Pulse magazine, based in Milton Keynes. Reap the benefits of keeping busy during chilly February. February is a pivotal month in the garden with plenty to do. It's time to prune and trim hawthorn, beech and hornbeam hedges before the nesting season. Clean out nest boxes and recite them if they were unused last year. Continue to refill bird feeders and keep bird baths topped up, clean and frost-free. Our feathered friends need the extra support at this time of year. Collate the readings of your maximum minimum thermometer each day, be it outdoors or in the greenhouse. And keep a written record on your new calendar. This will help you to plan watering, seed sowing and propagation moving forward, and when to use fleece to protect seedlings. During a fine morning, get outside and prepare the vegetable plot or raised beds. Remove slugs and snails sheltering under any plastic sheet coverings or cloches. Rake the surface and work in a general fertilised or well-rotted compost, then cover again with plastic sheeting. If chili seeds are growing from an early sowing, prick them out when 2.5 to 3 centimetres tall, which will encourage more bushy growth. Lettuce seeds, like salad bowl and cos varieties, can grow well outside under a cloche. Stay with the salad and vegetable theme by sowing tomato, broccoli and salad crops in a heated propagator. Brussels sprouts, radishes, leeks, peas and spinach can be popped in seed trays indoors. Autumn-raised aqua dulce, Claudia and the Sutton, broad beans, which will now be in small pots, can be planted out and will be grown on one of the raised beds. We might make a start by sowing our leeks in pots this year, as they also do well when planted out in a raised bed. Buy first early potatoes and put them in trays. I use egg boxes, ensuring that the end of the tuber with the most eyes is uppermost. Earlies benefit more from sprouting than main crop varieties. Sow sweet peas individually in small pots or in reasonable sized modules. I have found germination to be slow, so soaking the seed overnight prior to sowing is beneficial. It's time to order plug-grown bedding plants. I water them on arrival and pot them up individually in multi-purpose compost. They are placed in full light in the greenhouse and covered overnight if frost is forecast. Snowdrops, offering a pretty display just now, will come to the end of their show soon, and the clumps may then be divided with a fork, half to be planted elsewhere and half to be replanted in the original hole with a little extra compost. This type of propagation is known as in the green. Ferns will benefit from being cut right down to the base. Very soon new growth will appear, nourished by a layer of compost around each clump. There's plenty to be getting on with here, but be ready to spring into action next month too.
DNF Soundings.
Now we have the quiz
answers
for this edition. Take it away, Roger.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Roger Brooks back with the results to our quiz. Question 1. The Liverpool venue that saw the Beatles, kick off their careers was The Cavern. The Cavern. Question 2. Blue Ribbon Sports these days is known as Nike or Nike. Question 3. Harry Webb is, of course, Sir Cliff Richard. Question 4. World War I, the war to end all wars, not that it was, of course, ended in 1918. Question 5. The opera Aida was written by Verdi. Verdi. Question 6. In The Crown, the Queen was played originally by Claire Foy. Claire Foy. Question 7. Istanbul, in Turkey, used to be known as Constantinople. Question 8. Sweden is the country with most islands. Question 9. The smallest sovereign state in the world is the Vatican City. Bit of a tricky one, that. And question 10. The capital of Canada is Ottawa. Ottawa. How did you do? Very well, I hope. Bye for now.
TNF Soundings.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!